This is Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. Every year, the competition among smartphone companies has gotten more and more intense. Apple recently announced that you can unlock your iPhone with your face. Google is advertising a phone with unlimited storage. And Samsung has made phones larger with curved screens and a stylus. But as demand for smartphones has surged, the labor practices at those companies have been called into question. And recent reports about Samsung's factories in Vietnam have revealed some disturbing patterns in their working conditions. Michelle Chan is a contributing writer for The Nation, and she recently wrote about Samsung. Her story is, was your smartphone built in a sweatshop? And I'm pleased it brings Michelle Chan to the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
So Samsung is obviously a company and based in South Korea. When did it first open factories in Vietnam?
Well, it's actually got a huge workforce, an estimated 1.5 million workers basically around the world. So to say it is a South Korean-based company is true, but in reality, their reach is pretty global. Vietnam has been a huge supplier of smartphone manufacturing facilities. It's primarily the study focused on the workplace conditions at two main factories that are based in a provincial city in Vietnam. But it is pretty much supplying much of the iPhones that much of the smartphone supply that is sold around the world. So a lot of that makes it into American markets.
So let me ask you, so you're talking about two factories in Vietnam. Are they making the entire smartphone or components of a smartphone?
No, these are smartphone manufacturing facilities, but it does have huge supplier factories. So these are they're Samsung factories, but they are making smartphones, and they are making the same types of phones that go around the world.
So, and just to, because I want to be clear here, are they making, so for instance, I have an iPhone and it says designed in California, assembled in China.
Right.
What's happening at these factories in Vietnam, are they making all of the components of the smartphones?
No.
Or just the screens or just
right.
the cases?
So they are major manufacturing facilities for smartphone components, but you know, the manufacturing of the smartphone is really a global supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these, you know, the assembly might be in one place for different components. So it is pieced together from different factories at different regional facilities based around Asia.
Okay, so why did Samsung choose Vietnam?
Vietnam has, I guess, what you might call a pretty optimal labor force conditions for a company like Samsung. Samsung is notoriously opaque in terms of its regulatory practices. It is also pretty non-transparent when it comes to its own executive functions. So it has a reputation for, not only corrupt management that is based out of South Korea, but also substandard workforce conditions wherever it is based. So, the focus of the NGO that put out this recent study, which is called IPEN, they have looked at the conditions facing a largely what you might call a docile workforce in Vietnam. Vietnam does not have what we would call an independent trade union movement. So what you might see in these factories are pretty substandard working conditions, as well as unhealthy conditions that have been self-reported by many of the workers. And what a lot of the study focuses on is these toxic exposures that have been self-reported by the workers that they interviewed, and they have major health impacts that have been identified.
Well, let's talk a little bit more in the specifics about this. First, let's talk about the type of person working at the Samsung factory in Vietnam. Is it mostly men, or is there a split? evenly split between men and women?
No, it's actually largely women making up a large majority of the workforce, and these are often young women. But you know, the occupational health hazards have been reported, you know, across the workforce, but they are especially alarming for the women workers because they have actually identified high rates of miscarriage among them. I mean, this is obviously not a controlled study, so it is very difficult to see, you know, where exactly, you know, if there is an unusual rate of miscarriage, how that would measure up in terms of the relating it to the actual toxicity of the products that they're making. But, you know, Samsung has been known to be exposing workers to these hazards, even in their Korean-owned factories based in Korea. So, you know, the Vietnamese women workers have been reporting not only really exhausting, you know, workplace schedules, really long hours, basically forced overtime, but also things like chronic joint pain, fatigue, and other health symptoms, as well as these alarming rates of miscarriage. What the exact cause is, we don't know.
Why are there so many women who make up the factory workforce?
You know, it's actually a little known fact, I guess, of global electronics manufacturing, which is that this is a supposedly cutting edge industry with a very high tech manufacturing workforce. But a lot of the work is done by women who are typically non-organized workers. They're generally, I mean, culturally thought to be a bit easier to control, perhaps, than male workers. And since these are non-union factories, which is part of Samsung's sort of global workplace policy, you know, what you'll find is that a lot of these women are migrating from different parts of the country to seek higher paying jobs. And, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, these are relatively high paying, relatively stable wage earning jobs that these women might otherwise not have access to.
Now, so the factory workers, they're mostly women. A lot of them are coming from other regions of the country. A lot of them are mothers. Are the mothers separated from their children? I mean, you report that they are, but why is that?
It has to do with the way that Asian workforces are often set up, which is a dormitory setting. So what you might typically expect to see from, you know, a more campus-like setting at a school, university or something like that, I mean, that is those are the conditions that workers are expected to live in. So they actually live at the facilities that they work at, which, of course, makes it even harder. Well, it makes it easier for them to control,
and to work those
but
long
it's
hours
harder for
about.
Regulators to really understand sort of the lived experiences of these workers, because they're really always at work wherever they are.
And well, if they're separated from their children, where do their children live?
They generally live with relatives, with family outside, you know, off the factory grounds, because, I mean, the dormitory setting is set up so that these people are pretty much packed, you know, into dorm rooms, basically. And so, you know, they have to live on their own and then report straight to work every day. And then after a very, very long shift of perhaps 8 to 12 hours, you know, perhaps including egregious rates of overtime, they end up returning exhausted, you know, late in the day or at night to their dorm rooms and basically just go to sleep.
You're listening to Michelle Chen, contributing writer for The Nation, about her recent story about Samsung entitled "Was Your Smartphone Built in a Sweatshop?" Michelle, how hard is it to collect data about working conditions in Vietnam?
It's not only hard to collect data about working conditions in Vietnam, but in all Samsung manufacturing facilities because of the company's pretty non-transparent policies on how it publicly discloses not only what its workplace conditions are like, but also the types of chemicals that they're using in their phones, the types of toxic exposures that these workers are getting. Vietnam itself has a labor ministry, has pretty good laws on the books. But after IPEN did this study independently on its own in partnership with a locally based NGO that's focusing on environmental health, they put together this study, and the Vietnamese Labor Ministry actually initiated its own audits of the factory. Mm-hmm. For its part, Samsung also claims to be doing its own internal audits. And the Labor Ministry did find some upsetting findings, but mostly it did not touch upon the occupational injury and chemical contamination issues that were talked about in the IPEN report. And there's a great suspicion that the Vietnamese Labor Ministry, if not in in direct collusion with Samsung, is certainly not doing all it can to regulate Samsung.
Well, I mean, hasn't Samsung threatened legal action against the group investigating the labor violations?
Yeah. So the NGO that is based in Vietnam, they have reportedly, well, the workers, first of all, have been threatened with legal action that they've reported. And the NGO that is based in Vietnam that partnered with IPEN to do the study, they too have been threatened with legal action. Samsung has done all it can to actually keep the report from being circulated within Vietnam itself, even though it has gotten international coverage.
You know, as I was preparing for this and reading your article, I kept thinking about the TPP.
Yeah,
the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that was the big trade deal that both candidates for president said that they were against. But one of the hallmarks of it that the Obama administration kept trying to talk about were the labor standards and the environmental standards that were in the deal that other countries, particularly Vietnam, would have to abide by. I'm just wondering if you have any clarity or any thoughts on whether TPP would have had any kind of positive impact on these conditions that these reports highlight.
Well, it's interesting that you raised the issue of the TPP, which was, of course, the source of great controversy domestically,
right,
for what it would do to the American workers here. Actually, a lot of environmental groups and many, many labor groups definitely questioned and challenged the TPP because they said it was not as strong on labor issues such as this or even environmental issues as it should have been. So it remains an open question whether or not the TPP, had the Trump administration followed through on it, done anything for these workers. If anything, people are saying that the TPP should not engage with Vietnam at all. Many of the groups that would have rejected such workplace conditions in Vietnam would also have serious concerns about whether the TPP would truly raise workplace standards or simply further entrench the kinds of exploitation as well as environmental damage and environmental health damage that is already existing and basically allowing these industries to flourish already across Asia.
Are there any companies breaking the mold, actually doing a good job in terms of the labor force in its factories?
Well, the big rival to Samsung, of course, is Apple, which also claims to have numerous corporate responsibility social practices. In reality, all of these huge manufacturing companies and these brand names typically fall short in the tech industry when it comes to upholding the standards that environmental groups and public health advocates would really like to see in workplaces around the world. Many will say that even in South Korea, the factories, the Samsung factories in South Korea, are still way behind, and they themselves are ahead of where places like Vietnam are. And it becomes sort of a global race to the bottom. So that is the global trend. There are a couple of innovative sort of startup brands that are trying to create more responsible, sustainable smartphones that do not, for instance, rely on this constant cycle of production where there are new products coming out every season. A big part of the industry is that it just relies very heavily on a fast-track manufacturing workforce, an on-demand workforce, and constant production of new products when people really think that we don't necessarily need to have a new smartphone or a new iPhone coming out every 6 months.
Well, you tell that to the people standing in line. Michelle Chan, thank you very much. Michelle is a contributing writer for The Nation, and we've been speaking about her recent story for The Nation called "Was Your Smartphone Built in a Sweatshop?" Thank you again, Michelle, for being here.
Thank you.
Coming up, Michael Wolff talks about his new book, Fire and Fury. It's making big waves in the Trump administration and is the first book this administration has tried to block from publication. And later on in the show, Christopher Yates with his new novel, Gristmill Road. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.